Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and I live in Wichita, Kansas. I am a Patreon supporter for Creative Control. I discovered Creative Control some years ago, I think maybe while looking for interviews with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. And I stumbled across this conversation that Vish had with Tommy Stinson that was really insightful. Vish held his own. I think Tommy can be a little bit of a difficult interview at times. And it went really well, and it really got into some areas that I wasn't expecting. And I thought, gosh, I have to listen to more of this guy and his podcast. Yeah, sometimes I'm not necessarily a fan of the music or musicians that Vish will have on the show, but I always appreciate their creative process a little bit more. And more times than not, though, it does lead me to finding a new musical artist that I'm interested in, or to think a little bit differently about maybe some artists whose work I've overlooked. So, you know, go ahead, and if you've been waiting at all to support Vish and Creative Control, now is probably the best time to do it. I know as a public radio employee here in Kansas, listener-supported broadcasting, whether it's podcasts or radio itself, really isn't a thing of the past. It's actually very much a thing of both the present and the future. So, yay Vish, yay Creative Control.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Bum, 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 bum.
Cormac Culkeen and Dave Grennan are musicians and songwriters who are very proudly based in Peterborough, Ontario. After befriending each other at Trent University's radio station and realizing that they have a lot of shared interests when it comes to sound and music, the duo eventually formed Joyful Joyful, one of the most powerful and compelling live bands I've ever seen in my life. At long last, their self-titled debut album will be released by Idéfix Records on April 29th, 2022. And so Cormac and Dave joined me for a nice, fun, extensive conversation about vitamin C and an outfit adorned with oranges, the musicality of the world we're in and the sounds that we're surrounded by, their utterly unique approach to making music, songs written about and for saints, Cormac's complicated relationship with the church and why they were exiled from it, Christianity and queerness, their respective roles in Joyful Joyful, being a producer, upcoming tour dates, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol to sustain this podcast, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 683 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Cormac and Dave of Joyful Joyful, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Cormac, how you doing?
I'm really well. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. Where in the world are you?
I am in the center of the universe, Peterborough, Ontario, Canada.
Yeah, you like to think it's the center of the universe. I remember this. I remember you guys, you all thinking that. Yeah, that's true.
Listen,
yeah,
it's hometown proud, and like, but it's beautiful. I love being in Pete.
I like Peterborough. Who doesn't like Peterborough? It's a lovely little town, as we've established in the past, very similar to the city I used to call home. Guelph. In fact, is it true? Did we establish this? People like to think they're like sister cities or cousin, whatever the expression is. Is that right?
I think of Peterborough as the better Guelph for sure.
Yes. I recall this happening the last time I invoked
you can go down this.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I have no Guelph pride now. I'm gone. Yeah. I'm with you. Peterborough is great.
Yeah, they're both wonderful cities full of wonderful people.
They are, actually. Like, I'm totally for it. But Peterborough's the hometown, so that's where I'm at.
And how's your day in Peterborough shaping up thus far? We have this. This is hopefully going to be a highlight. What else is going on?
I've already had a great day. I went to a 50% off sale somewhere, and I got a matching citrus-themed summer set. Like a shirt with oranges on it and matching shorts with oranges on it. Oh. And like, I just was in that change room and I'm like, this is summer 2022 energy. I'm bringing it in. This is the like hot summer masculinity that I'm going to. So I'm having a great day, Vish. Like,
that's great.
I got a matching set of citrus themed shorts, you know?
You know, they were saying, they have been saying at various points during the pandemic, and it gets proven and disproven that you should, dose up on vitamin C, but I don't think that's what they meant.
But if they did mean it that way, I just feel like it would still be fine. Like,
but you've protected yourself. You're fine. You've got vitamin C.
No, everywhere. I'm covered.
Yeah. No, that's
I'm covered
good.
Either way.
Lovely to hear it, and I'm happy you're having a good day. That's great. Thanks, Corm. Dave, you're there. We heard you interject with your weird Peterborough pride thing that you do. How's it going?
it's false pride anyway. I don't give a care. I'm at work. I'm just working hard, making things go, and I'm having a beautiful day And I'm so glad to be here with you, too.
In which city are you working? Are you also in Peterborough?
I'm in Toronto, actually.
Toronto. Yeah. That's a big city. I miss Toronto. I miss things. Even if I were there, though, I don't know that I would access some of the things I miss because of all that's going on. Is it sleepy? How's it feeling in the big smoke?
Certainly, I'm living a sleepy life. You know, people are not, but we all need to make these choices about what will happen if we get sick. For lots of people, it's a few days, and then they can carry on. For some folks, depending on their work or their family, you know, there may be greater consequences, and I'm in that boat. So,
yeah, me too. I just want to say, I know we got heavy. We'll try to get us out of this, but I agree, and I'm the same as you, sleepy. And what are you going to do?
You sleep.
It's up and down. You sleep, yeah. You're sleepy, you have a little rest. That's right, yeah. Well, it's great to talk to both of you again. I haven't seen you in at least a couple of years, since I've left Ontario. I don't remember when the last time was, but it's really nice to see you this way. And I will say, as a fan, I'm so happy. There's a Joyful Joyful record. That's so great. So right away, congratulations. It's wonderful. For background, you've been on the show. You were on the Long Night talk show version of this podcast, so to speak, right? That's the only time.
Some years ago.
Yeah. But, Carm, you might recall, we captured a song. We captured a performance from that evening, and that went out into the world. So that... For those, I don't have a lot of like diehard episode by episode fanatics, so this, but I'm sure some people listening have heard, might recall that episode. But for those who haven't, and to catch people up, I want to get into the history of this amazing dynamic that you two share. Coram, can you, and I'm sure Dave will interject because he's an interjector. Coram, can you talk a little bit about how Joyful Joyful came together exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you said Dave's an interjector. I feel like Dave and I are actually both interjectors, and we have built a friendship on just insisting upon the things that we need to say to one another, which is great. Yeah. So Joyful Joyful. In terms of how it got started, Vish?
Well, I know a bit of the history. There's some biographical information circulating. I know a little bit about the radio station stuff. But yeah, I think just for people who don't know how this happened, because it's a very unique configuration, it's a very unique sound. I think my instinct is telling me it's worth talking about how it came together. The origin story. You know, everyone likes an origin story now.
They do.
I mean, I know you. We've established you like an oranges story. That was my...
Oh, my goodness.
Dad joke. I just wanted to get back to the...
That was a sour
hey,
joke.
Hey, you're the one wearing all oranges all the time. You're covered in oranges. I might as well say you like an oranges story. That's me. That's me in a nutshell.
It's just you started punning, and now I'm on a roll in my brain. I'm going a million miles.
I know it's not appealing. Okay, anyway, let me... Sorry.
I'm going to let you win.
Sorry about this. We're falling behind. What? That doesn't even make no sense. Okay, let's get to the juice. How did Joyful Joyful come together? Let's get the pulp. Come on. We don't want to be pulp-free. We want to tell a story. Seedless. What? Oh. What are the seeds of the Joyful Joyful oranges story? Come on. I got them. I got a million of them. Let's go.
This is unhinged. Like, if I was going to guess the number of children you have based on that string of puns alone, I'd be like, couple dozen.
I do. I have an oranges dozen. No, I'm sorry. Anyway, aren't you glad I asked that question? Let's get back to it. Let's get back to Joyful Joyful.
Absolutely.
Go for it.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're just two men in love. I think that... It's hard to talk about Joyful Joyful, though, without talking about friendship and the beauty of friendship unfolding. These days, especially when I want to talk about Joyful Joyful, I want to start by saying that Dave and I are friends.
Yeah.
And it started very much in a desire for a shared creation and like a bit of a shared intimacy in sound based on mutual regard. Because I had... Like, we had heard the things that each other made. Like, I heard the things that Dave was making, very strange things. And Dave heard was I was making, and like we kind of started to, I think, want to make things together. And we were all kinds of, we're friends in many ways, but we became friends musically and as people composing together, as well as people who've spent a lot of time together.
That's a whole other...
Covered a lot of road together, yeah, you know?
That's a whole other bond.
No, it is, though.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got the friendship intertwined with the real passion of a creative enterprise. And as we know from rock history, that can either go extremely well or can sour, like a bad orange. Anyway, let's go to Dave back. I didn't mean to call back to the oranges, but now I'm on a roll. Dave, do you dispute anything Cormac just said?
No, not at all. I mean, it would be strange if I did.
Be awesome if you did, though.
Yeah, I think, as you well know, and as you've seen with us together, that there is a clear and abiding bond between us, I think, and that very quickly became apparent on meeting and being introduced to each other. And it took a while of, we were both busy with our own lives and circling each other and approaching each other, and not in a scared dog kind of way, but just, you know, we're young people, living a student-ish life, and Cormac let me show up to their house whenever it so pleased me. And I would go, the downstairs door was always unlocked. I would go and leave them notes. Or
this is too much information. I think if people know this, they're going to go to Peterborough and find Corm's house. Yeah. Be like, oh, it's notes. Like that. It's like that Michael Moore movie. All Canadians leave there.
Here's the thing, though. Like, the thing that's wild about it, though, Vish, is that, like, it's funny because, like, I actually, at the time, I lived a very chaotic and beautiful life. I live a beautiful life that is slightly less chaotic now. And, like, the fact that, you know, the door was kind of always unlocked and, like, Dave could come at 1 in the morning or 3 in the morning and I would be up. I'd probably be up.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's I think that's the time that we met each other, you know?
Real kindred spirits. I gather that. And like you alluded to, Dave, like, I'm familiar with your dynamic from seeing it live and hanging out with you a little bit. I know there's that spark. The cliche in music is that musicians have conversations with each other via their instruments. You know, that chemistry is from this communication that happens via sound. In the live setting, as we've, and I want to let you frame this, but in my knowledge of what you do, it is a specific kind of live conversational interplay that's happening between the sound you're making, Dave, and the sound Corm's making. Dave, can you just, I've spoken vaguely for people listening. Can you home in on what I'm talking about in terms of your actual interplay as players, as people making music together?
Yeah, definitely. And feel free to draw me out of the weeds when I get in there in 20 seconds or so. in our live setup, I mean, so much of the sound is coming from Cormac's performance, so much of the sound beyond just the actual Cormac's delivery and singing in the moment is so much of our sound is built from out of that and in the world or worlds that we build are taking Cormac's voice live and pushing it in all these directions while Cormac remains clear and present and whole and I think we play to each other and we take time to listen to each other to find out where we go next. And sometimes we know because we know these songs, but sometimes we don't quite know and we find it together. And yeah, that's
pretty much
a partial answer without going too far.
No, that's good. Cormac, can you talk a little bit about what Dave is doing from your perspective and what you are doing from your perspective? He did that. I gather that, but from your perspective, just your objective to what Dave is up to over there. And I know I as I recall, when we did this on stage, I tried to get into it a little bit too. And it gets a little technical, but it's not like, just so people are clear, Dave's not playing like a guitar. Or
no,
something.
I will paint a picture.
Please, like, do. Thank you.
This is the thing, right? It's like if you saw us on stage, Or for that matter, and crucially, if you try to pack us into a car, it is a very compact setup. I am not holding an instrument. The only thing that I do is to sing when we're performing. And Dave is standing behind a fairly large double-tiered table of like effects pedals and guitar pedals and the like. And while I'm singing, my voice is being processed through that whole chain of pedals that Dave has in front of him, among other things. And we have there's other elements that we've brought in. There's field recordings, there's drones that we've made out of recordings of my voice. There's sometimes I get to do fun things like whistle or play a bell just so that I can feel like I have hands as well as lungs. But there's a kind of compactness to it in spite of itself, because sonically it's not actually particularly minimal or compact. It's kind of expansive, and a bit of scatteredness or whatever. Like we get to, Dave said, you know, we made like world building, or like we get to make worlds. And that's kind of what we try to do, is try to create something that's enveloping or whatever. So I'm singing like my life depends on it. And that's being transformed and doubled and tripled and amplified and processed and split apart and put back together through all of these pedals that Dave has in front of him. And yeah.
And one of the reasons those of us who have witnessed Joyful Joyful are so captivated, and I mean, I've seen people brought to tears, beyond the power of what you're doing, I will say, like, part of an aspect of that power is I think it's just utterly unique. I can't think of too many configurations like this or experience. I mean, I've been to 3 billion concerts. You know, I have lots of records. Joyful Joyful stands out. And I think that's part of why we are so moved by it. And I'm not just trying to overflatter you here. This is the truth. So what I want to get to a little bit is how you arrived at of all the options, conventional musical options you probably had. It's very fascinating that you arrived here, and that we've all, those of us who witnessed it, get to see this utterly idiosyncratic, special thing. Dave, can I call upon you to talk about that? Like, why this approach to, I see what you're, I mean, with Cormac's power, I'm sure you were like, oh, this is exciting. I got to do something good with this. We got to do something good with this. But to do what you're doing, can you talk about your how you got to this musical aesthetic together, Dave?
Also, I guarantee I'm going to want to interject. And
I already did.
Also, I know. Okay, go ahead.
I got the interjector wrong.
Yeah,
I thought it would be mostly
actually
Dave.
It's a side project of ours. for a lot of people with social anxiety, it's a hard show to bear. But how did we? I don't know. I know, like, I could talk about how my interests from youth led to somehow to this, but I don't
I think that's your own Orange's story. That's your story. That's what I want to get to. I want to get to that because I think it is important, because something led you down this path to do this. And please feel free, if it means citing influences or things you saw.
Go, Dave.
Yeah, do it.
I don't know. I don't know at what point in my childhood sound struck me, but it did. And I mean, I think probably for a lot of people, I can think of two like ancient examples, and maybe there are probably lots of other people who have had this feeling, but maybe didn't follow it for the rest of their life. But I remember we had this vacuum when I was a child, and it would go back and forth on the carpet. It had a bag. It was brown and white, I think. That's probably not true. I don't remember colors at all, but in my mind it's brown and white, and it just moaned, like hummed and moaned as my mom was vacuuming. And it was so, I loved listening to it. It was a rich, like must have been a timbrely rich sound. And there were like, you know, these, it sounds like it's like a, just like moaning back and forth. But then I would listen, of course, and there was never the same sound twice, even though it was the same tones over and over. And we also had a dishwasher that had a personality in that way, and that had these, you know, every cycle sounded kind of the same, but again, these long groans and moans and tonally rich and timbrally rich sounds that I remember, like, that's from when I was very tiny. And then for some reason that, I have no idea why that struck me, but it did. And then eventually I was exposed to people who were making music that had something in common with those sounds in my early adolescence. And then when I discovered that, it was also the time of high piracy online, MP3 wise. And so I just would read and read and read and listen and listen and listen and dream of going to Concordia for their electroacoustics program, which I never did. But that was the where I thought that I would find my way in the world. And then it wasn't until I moved to Peterborough and got my very first radio show, Thank You, Christian Slater, that the show wasn't called Thank You, Christian Slater. But
oh, Pump Up the Volume? Is that a reference exactly. to the film, Pump Up the Volume? Okay. I wasn't sure where you were going with that one. Yeah, I guess I was sure.
Although you were sure, but you weren't sure. Seems out of the blue. But
Christian Slater has had a lot of projects. It could have been anything. It could have been, oh, I saw True Romance, and I had the radio on in the car the one time. You know, I thought maybe that's where you were coming from. Anyway, sorry, yeah. Pump Up the Volume it is. Yeah.
And I took all my crummy electronics, and I think at some point prior to that, when I was still in late high school or whatever, I learned about no input mixing and feedback loops, and I bought this crummy little realistic rack mixer that had a built-in short delay, and I would just feed it into itself and do that forever in hours. And then when I got to Peterborough, Trent Radio is a glorious place where if you are convincing and you follow the protocols, you just get a radio show. And they gave me one, and I did live noise for hours, for years, which kind of helped me to find my way a little bit. And then met two very kindred spirits in a band I played guitar and sang in, a couple of folks named Bennett and Wes, and we had a weird, beautiful band that we explored a bunch of like normal rock things, but also the deep strangeness. Cormac's looking.
I'm just making a face because. Yeah, yeah. Like if that was normal rock and roll, then I'd say check yourself. But that was a wild band.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing based on Cormac's comment and how you were struggling for a moment to try to encapsulate what you used to do, is that Dave, for whatever reason, you've been drawn to the margins of culture and expression. So something, and it might have been because of a vacuum.
Yes.
Not a vacuum of like the way we say, like, there's where there was a vacuum and so we had to or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. You literally, it was probably like a Hoover vacuum, mm-hmm. not to plug any particular company. I'm the same. I'm drawn to noise. Mm-hmm. We have now a white noise.
Yeah.
We have a white noise machine. And I can't sleep without it now. And I never had one when I was a kid. I used to have music on and would fall asleep and the tape would stop itself, the tape deck. It wasn't like a, or the CD would stop spinning, and then, but I had to. I, much to the chagrin of my first, university dormitory roommate, because some of the music was not sleep inducing. Anyway, it reminds me a little bit of the fact that there's a song on this record called Cecilia, right? And mm-hmm. I believe it is that a Cormac? Is that a reference to Saint Cecilia?
It is.
And Saint Cecilia was the patron of music, is that correct? Or sound?
She is the patron saint of music, among other things.
So something going on there with all of you and noise and sound. Mm-hmm. Let me just jump ahead to that. And I'm assuming the and probably presumptuously that the delineation of responsibilities is what Dave just described that Dave does. Cormac, are you writing the lyrics that you're singing yourself?
I think in some ways the process has actually become less delineated as time has gone on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And part of that is that I think we have both grown in knowledge of one another's process as well as like confidence in our ability to give feedback to each other. So typically I'm writing lyrics, but Dave's contributions to lyrics are ever increasing and very helpful. And I would say that my ability to communicate effectively with what it is that I want to hear from Dave and how it is that I want that to happen has also increased. So
yeah, and so, I don't mean to draw
yes and no.
I don't mean to draw too fine a line to Saint Cecilia, but in that song, I believe, and I have it in front of me here. I don't have any notes in front. Oh yeah, ostensibly one of the choruses, I suppose, is "Bring Sound."
And, yes.
And so I wonder if you can talk about that song, that sentiment, as it relates maybe to what you two are doing. If, again, forgive me if I'm making connections that aren't there, but what inspired that song and that notion of Bring Sound and Saint Cecilia? Why has all this been conjured in the context of a joyful, joyful song?
I have so much to say about this, Vish.
Good. It's a podcast. I need to fill time.
Great. I think that this was the second song that we ever wrote is Cecilia. And
Marrow was first, or Jubilation maybe?
Sibaldis.
I'm guessing.
So the first one that we wrote together was Sibaldis.
Okay.
And Cecilia was the second one.
Sibaldis is also there's a religious figure there.
He's also a saint.
Yeah.
He's the patron saint invoked against cold.
Right.
Yeah. So there was a time when I had just been sort of circling around the idea of writing some songs about some saints, right? And because saint mythology is an endlessly deep well. You know, there's like, it's just endless. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, sometimes it's boring stuff. It's like, this person was martyred as a virgin, you know, like, and we know nothing else. And then there's other ones where it's like, and then he slayed a dragon. And you're like, cool. That sounds
is there dragon slaying in the saint mythology? Really?
Yeah. Oh, man. Saint George.
Oh, right. Okay.
Saint George and the dragon. But that said, St. George is not the only purported dragon slayer. Dragon slaying gets bandied around a fair bit in the land of saints.
Listen,
which is weird because saints are in the last 2,000 years, never seen a dragon around these parts.
I've watched Game of Thrones, so I have a sense of what you're talking about. But other than that, I'm not as learned about the saint mythology as I should be, I guess.
There is absolutely no, there is no should here. Like,
no obligation.
And this is the thing that I love in relation to when Davis was telling the story about the vacuum. I had a wave of affection, like just like chest deep for Dave, because like I also have the vacuum story, but for me, like, it was like I would turn on the microwave and sing along to the drone of the microwave, right?
Wow.
There are the notes on my phone, like that, or the like the sound notes, so many of them are me just singing along with construction sites, like so many machines in our world.
Yeah.
Traffic or even highways, they've got pitches, right?
Yeah.
And I was so fascinated with that when I was a kid.
This recalls like early Velvet Underground explorations and what people like John Cale were interested in, the ambient noise, if you will, but really it's the sound of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
that you're trying to harness and capture, like record maybe, but also try to replicate in your instrumentation.
But also, like, it's not even... It's interesting the language we use around this, right? To harness, to capture.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost this thing around like animal husbandry that we think about in relation to sound.
I don't want to well, do it has anything. To,
it's I think it's also commodification. Like basically the thing that we the field recording that you hear, you must capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And freeze it. As evidence of something, but then ultimately it will be commodified, and that's how records started being made.
That
people figured out, oh, people really enjoy this thing when they come to it or witness it. Imagine the market we'd have if we could freeze it and they could take it home with them. And that was my how the record industry began 101 lesson that I wanted to share with you. But I mean, yes, I agree with you. It is weird language. But
I say that not because I'm like, oh, that's, you don't use that language. It's just that like thing because like you've got this love. Like I think that the weird thing is that like there seems for me in relation to bring sound, right?
Yeah, yeah.
there's at least three ideas there. One is that sound is already present. Like right now, sirens going off around me, whatever, my chair is creaking, and we're just surrounded by sound.
Mm-hmm.
Thing number two is a deep and abiding and completely non-volitional love of sound. Like I love the sounds I hear and I am like moved by them. And how do I show love for sound? And then the thing is too, it's like, okay, so how do I think with that other thing with bring sound is like, how do I add to it? You know, I've talked about before this idea, this very like Irish, old Irish idea of the song being in the world and the singer just tapping into something that's already there. And I think one of the joys about recognizing and making a record of ambient sound, and record as in like an archive, right?
Yeah, a document. Yeah.
Yeah, a document, yeah. To make a document of sound that already exists. I think that's one of the things that's neat about ambient sound or like the sounds of the world or of machines or things like that is that it's just already there. So how do we move with it that in a way that I think shows the deep love that I have for that kind of sound.
Yep.
And the fact that like even the drones, like I'm drawn to drone music because like, you know, like I love traditional music. I love like, you know, like a lot of Irish music, Scottish music, East Coast music, and all these kind of traditional drone music. But like, where do you find drones in the wild? It's like machines. That's where you hear drones in the wild.
If I go to my porch right now in Edmonton, I will hear a sound. I will hear the drone of traffic or whatever else is making the sound. And I mean, for some of us, that is a signal that connects us to the world. For some of us, that's an intrusion, an imposition, depending on the hour of day. If you hear the, you know, when the garbage trucks come in the morning, necessarily a sound you welcome, but it's sound. And so all this to say, I appreciate your relationship with sound and I appreciate your acknowledgement of and devotion to sound, and you call upon it. And those of us who have witnessed that particular song, it stirs something in us. And is it too far a thing to say, Cormac, that you're conjuring something when you say this?
I think that there's something like, I also like that turn in the song because it's this moment where also my voice becomes super affected in a way that like, so we've dropped it down a couple of octaves. There's a weird note thrown in there. And so I sound like this kind of like, there's this kind of slight monstrousness to it where it's sort of like, things get a little bit spooky.
Otherworldly at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so like, for sure, like there's something where it's sort of like, this is much, much bigger and maybe a bit more elemental than everyday life anyway, or it feels that way.
There's again, I don't mean to invoke cliches, but when people have seen Joyful, Joyful, I think I've heard them and conversed with people who say, oh, that was like church, like that was like a religious experience. Because like I've literally seen hardened men in tears. I'm thinking of an example of someone who I know that he is an emotional powder keg or whatever, but I also have been to a trillion things and I've never so moved he had to leave, like so moved he couldn't take it. So there's this, and like I say, that connection to church or some spiritual upheaval has occurred in people. It fascinates me. And it wasn't really until the record was packaged together and I've got all the biographical information and I can read the lyrics that it really, really dawned on me maybe how connected it is to that spiritual ideal. It's felt spiritually lifting to me, uplifting to me as well. I don't cry unless my cat passes away or my children do something sweet. no, I've been moved on that level too. But in seeing it in the record, seeing the lyrics and reading what you've written about what the record is, the narrative of the record, the connection to church seems a bit more clear to me. And I want you to scrutinize what I've just said as much as you want to and figure out what I'm getting at. But before I do that, Dave, I'm going to go to Dave first. Are there spiritual or religious conversations that you and Cormac have had? Do you have any yourself, any particular connection to that mode of devotion?
We have had many conversations. We, in some ways, believe very different things. But I think in other ways, very concretely, in a sense, maybe that's really the wrong word, but we'll find out what I meant by that, I guess, together.
Construction company you guys are running.
Yeah, their company's actually called Very Concretely. I was actually just going somewhere about to pitch one of our many endeavors.
All the podcasts now have these midstream ads, and that was Dave's.
Mm-hmm. For we the do a lot company. Of foundation work. So
foundational. Church, it's foundational
church
work.
Is crumbling. We believe very, very different things, but so we talk about it a lot. But I think we will get to we have some very deeply held shared beliefs as well. Less so about what is greater than us, but more about what is shared between all of us as human beings. I think is what we share more.
There's some infrastructural church stuff happening. I feel like there's some acknowledgement that, in the biographical info, mm-hmm. Cormac, does it suggest you were exiled from the church? Is that correct? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I've often described the church or Christianity or the scriptures as a very, very deep well. You know, it's kind of like the saints, right? It's sort of endless. And so, yeah, I had an experience where when I was a teenager, I was I should like make a pulp book of like, I was a teen fundamentalist. And I was very, very born again. I wasn't raised particularly religious, but between the ages of 15 and 21, give or take, I was really...
became a born very, again. Very yeah.
Born again and very evangelical, charismatic Christian and... but absolutely could not belong in that world for very long. So when I was exiled from that world, it was because I came out and it was right in the middle of the kind of culture wars around like same-sex marriage in Canada and things like that. And I think I was just made an example of in a lot of ways.
Mm. The born-again period, do you have a sense of what prompted that? It's an interesting turn of phrase. I've had friends who've done this, gone through this, where I'm thinking of a friend of mine in particular who was a little wild in high school. And then towards the end, something happened, some reckoning occurred that I'm not totally privy to. And they became a born-again Christian and everything changed. They were going and doing like world vision missionary work and instead of dating a lot, had that was all gone. And I never knew. We did have a conversation about it as when we were adults, but I never knew at the time what had happened. And sorry, I don't mean to pry either, but do you have a sense of to be born again? I think is to, first of all, it's to realign your life, but it's to commit so greatly to something and then to be rejected by that thing because of who you are. I can't imagine the knot of emotions there. I can't imagine the frustration there. I think some of it comes through in what you're expressing in your music. But again, I don't mean to pry, but it might be germane. Can you talk about...
You can pry. Like, I think that like maybe like 10 minutes ago, you're like, this is a podcast. I need to fill it up somehow. But like, I will happily answer any questions about that stuff. I think also because it also... I think that it's something that people are curious about. And I also think that... I don't know. People got to talk about, you know, like weird, queer religious trauma and like, whatever. That's cool.
Well, you're also, we're getting at the, it's a relationship. Like you are in love with an institution and what it symbolizes. They loved you back and then they stopped.
Yeah. And I think that's,
that is the fodder for poetry and songs and, you know, this kind of therapeutic reflective exercise. Like, I feel like, am I wrong? I mean, these experiences do fuel some of your work.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a couple of things that are interesting about me being a teen fundamentalist.
Okay.
The first is that I was always And this is something that I talk about, you know, in my job too. It's like, you know, I was always queer and I was always trans. If you look at pictures of me when I was like a little kid, it's like, I look like I do, you know, I'm just a little bruiser. And like, but also, you know, that makes for a painful rural childhood. And I was as strange then as I am now with less social skills. And the way that I became a Christian is also an expression of queerness, right? Like, in that I had this kind of sort of mystical, John Wesley describes it as a heart strangely warmed. Like I had this mystical experience, which then led to an immersion in a very tight knit, spiritually intimate community. So like when I became a born again Christian, I did that as a queer person living a queer life, even though I didn't know I was gay or trans. Like I didn't know those things about myself, but that doesn't change that that's who I was. And some of the reasons that I was drawn to this sort of strange experience, not most teens don't have that as their experience, is because I was queer, right? And like, it was a queer way to be a teenager in a lot of ways, is to be just like face deep in this world, right? And then what it also meant was that I had a way to make sense of the world, which was very, very rigid at the time, which simplified some things for me, which would have been complicated for sure. And then also what it meant, though, that was that I was steeped in this like beautiful, beautiful scripture, right? Like this kind of tradition of literature, both in terms of music, sacred music, scripture, and then commentary and saints and things like that. And a community that was like incredibly, incredibly involved and intimate, provided that you were able to adhere to its norms.
Well, that's what I wondered about, because as an alienated or someone who feels estranged or isolated, I assume you're drawn to things like scripture and that community because it's a shared way of thinking.
Of course.
It's an entry point into a community.
Absolutely.
We all agree that it's like society. We all agree that there are laws that bind us together and social decorum, which, by the way, I think has completely crumbled now because of the last few years. But my point is, I would think there are lots of people now younger than us who feel like they're going through what you went through.
Sure.
And they're searching for things. Well, and part of searching for community is experimenting and trying things out, I think.
Yeah.
A little bit. Like trying to find it, and if this fits, I tried this, I didn't like it, or they're weird, I didn't like it. But it seems to me that you did that sort of exercise and found your people.
Yeah.
But then you were rejected.
Yeah. And one of the things is because I also identify as a convert, right? I have the experience of having been a convert. And there's nothing that an evangelical tradition, regardless of what religious tradition it comes from, there's nothing that an evangelical tradition loves more than a convert, right? So not only was I a teen fundamentalist, I was an exemplary teen fundamentalist, because in an evangelical tradition, a convert is an evidence of the purpose of why you are here. Being a teen convert in that community meant that I actually had a very, very particular place. And the people around me who were also teen converts, it's like, it's not that we were totally uncommon, but like we were examples. We were seen as kind of being evidence. We were seen as being, you know, kind of the purpose of why people were there, right? So,
yeah,
you know, so, and also there's to some extent a higher standard, right? Because like our point of entry wasn't through our families. So what that meant is that our point of, like the way that we stayed was through adherence to the norms, right? And shared belief rather than shared family or things like that.
I don't know if this is the road I can take us down, but it's, as you're speaking, it occurs to me that evangelical Christians are of the belief that homosexuality is something that they're worried that their children will be converted into homosexuals, and the hypocrisy there is just occurring to me.
Yeah,
because you're right, a lot of religious sects are like, we need more people if we're going to keep sustaining this thing, so we got to convert people into Christians or Buddhists or Hindus or whatever. I'm I shouldn't have lumped my people in with that, the Hindus. But but you know what I mean? There's this constant, like, we need to keep the team going.
We make God in our own image, and we make other people in our own image, yes, too. So if you are a person, right, if you're a person or a people group that believes that your own actions are going to change the course of somebody's soul's history, it's like that, like, you can influence, and so that somebody can be converted. Of course you believe that other people are maybe trying to do that. It was very much a worldview that believed that there was teams, you know, and like we were on the.
It's all polarization and oppositional, and I get that part of it too. Yeah, I guess this isn't maybe that groundbreaking a thought. It's just sometimes when you're like, what is the motivation behind what some team, if you will, political party, religious group, what is their motivation here, and what are they really angry at? And I've said this ad nauseum about if I'm angry at my children about something they're doing or behave the way they're behaving, I'm often angry. I realize I'm angry at myself because they're little reflections of me.
Yeah.
And they're acting the way I act, and I'm not always self-aware enough to know, like, oh, that's actually, they're doing that because I do that. I think that's what we're getting at. I think a lot of anger and rage is because they're kind of like you.
Yeah.
And they're doing something like you, but for their own purposes. Anyway, again, maybe I'm not saying anything particularly profound, but I appreciate that context. And you alluded to the fact that when you get to that part in Cecilia, the bring sound part, your voice is modulated. Something happens, and that's Dave. So, Dave, you've got this role to play. It's like a weird, you're like the director of a narrative in a sense, I would say. Like, you're producing Cormac and the emotional tenor of the lyrics with your sound manipulation. Is that true on any level?
I mean, more true might be that if I err, then I could undermine everything that is happening so easily.
Okay.
And it's not that's not how I approach the performance or anything, but it is not that I would not say that I am performing my aspect of the music and shaping the sound beyond the purity of Cormac's voice. But I don't know that I am. I don't know where the responsibility for the effect of the music. That's a different conversation. Effect, but where the responsibility goes or comes from.
I feel like you're gently bristling at the notion that you might be a producer.
Well, no, because when I think of a producer, I think of, like, I mean, Cormac is their own man. Like, Cormac is, you know, like, when I think of a producer, then I think of more than just shaping the sound, but shaping the direction of the whole band and of the whole night. And maybe my definition is different than yours, is what I'm seeing on your face.
Well, all I was thinking of is like hip-hop duos.
Mm-hmm.
Like DJ Premier and Guru, or Eric B and Rakim, or whomever. I went old school, but yes, you have the DJ and you have the MC. You have the vocalizer and you have the person basically creating the soundscape.
Mm-hmm.
And on some level, we call them DJs. They often call themselves DJs.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically producers. So I'm just trying to clarify where I'm coming from. They are the producer, whether they made the beat. In a live setting, they're the ones setting the tone and producing the experience. And the MC, depending on their mood, the vocalizer, depending on their feeling, can stick to that script that they've done a million nights in a row, or they can read the room and do something. And the DJ / producer can do the same. So what I'm getting at, Dave, is you are like DJ Premier.
Mm-hmm. That's how we often talk about ourselves, actually. Yeah,
that's all I wanted to say. I think you're basically the gang star of ambient drone noise church music is what that should be the blurb on the sticker of the record.
That's good. We pitched that to the label, but
too wordy?
It was too wordy. It was their feedback. I think of my role in the live performance maybe in two ways, although this is a new thought to me, so let's find out how real it is. One is that I think of myself as a technician, and I am performing a series of moves because the songs have parts, and for the most part, in those parts, I am replicating a series of physical movements that I have done before, and the sound itself changes, is not always the same, but the goal is at certain points, say in Bring Sound, when Cormac's voice drops an octave, a fifth, and then two octaves in the fifth. Or I think that's approximately what it is. Fourth, doesn't matter. This is not my forte.
Just trying to get you out of the weeds. You asked me to step in every once in a while. I can't.
I live in the weeds.
You want to do fractions for the rest of the interview? Okay, got it.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah, if you can just give me a moment to finish the equation I'm just writing here.
But the Goodwill Hunting segment of the show.
So the one part is, technician, I think, of it. But then I'm also, at the same time, I don't know what it is, because yes, I'm doing the moves, but then I'm also just listening and trying to hear what is right and to hear what comes next, and not like to anticipate it, but just to, like, when we say bring sound, to me it's like let it come, not like we are carrying sound to you, but we're letting it come.
So
that's how I feel about the other part of my performance, is not just the technical moves, but the attentiveness and the response and the pursuit without knowing quite where I'm going to try to find the way.
It's why I used the phrase conjuring earlier, because I do think it's not it's not necessarily calling upon it. It is enhancing it in the space that it's in already or something. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. To me, almost conjuring has as if it is our will, and to me it does not feel like a willful act.
I was stumbling to try to say just that, so thank you, Dave, for your great interjection. That was a good one. Great. I appreciate
it. One of the good ones.
Coram,
you're 4/5 of
don't, please stop. I it's like a recipe for disaster at this point, all your fractions. Anyway, nice. Cormac, you had your hand up at one point. Did you want to say anything about this?
Listen, thank you for acknowledging my great restraint, because I really wanted to interject with excitement. But I think it was because I wanted to take a second to talk about how I feel about what Dave does too, which is that we couldn't do what we're doing without Dave, right? I love to sing, and I've sung in lots of different bands, configurations, things like this. And Joyful Joyful is the closest I think I've ever gotten to consistently being able to externalize the things that I hear in my head and in my body. And some of those limitations are that I can't read music. When I'm singing a note, I don't know what note I'm singing. And it's not a point of pride, but it's true. And what that means is that I'm limited in my my ability to communicate sometimes to other musicians. And it takes somebody who I've worked very well with, many very talented musicians who have been able to intuit what I've meant, or have been able to be patient with me when I'm like, where I know what I want to hear and I don't know what it is. So I need them to play five things and I go, no, yes. Like, until I've heard the thing. And the thing that's remarkable about Dave is that because he's also drawn to sounds that are not necessarily beautiful, but are interesting or whatever, often he will start with something that is really interesting to me that I can work with. But also, like, Dave is amazingly sensitive to very, very small changes in sound and, like, very small suggestions in terms of, like, I'm like, not this, but I'm feeling something in this direction or whatever. And, like, so, like, Dave and I composing together is something that it feels like, in some ways, the greatest gift of my life, because all of these things that I hope to hear and have wanted to hear for so long, all of a sudden I get to hear these things, right?
Yeah, because why? Because Dave is a producer, and I am just going to double down on that. That's what a producer is supposed to do. It's supposed to help you fulfill a vision, a sonic vision, if you will. And I think that's where I'm coming from. And I appreciate that you maybe, okay, Dave, I'll give you this. You're a co-producer. I can see you even bristling at the distinction. Like, I don't do this by myself. You are. And I also can hear in your voice the desire to shirk some responsibility, so that if things go wrong, you can't be blamed. So I'm going to give you this. You are both.
That is that's unfair.
No, I'm kidding.
It's unfair assessment.
It's a joke. It's a joke. I would be the same. No, we do this together. This is a full-on collaboration. I think it's too hoity-toity to call me a producer, but I think that's what we're getting at. And also, The underlying subtext, we like you, Dave. I like you. Cormac loves you. Like
you
it's that's just yeah. that's just
I
the
do.
Way it
they
is.
Do.
Yeah.
Do.
Now again, yeah. I wanna we've given people, I think, a taste of this record. I hope they check it out. Again, congratulations. It is, as far as I can tell, it's a self-titled release out on E-Day Fix. Mm-hmm. When is it out again there, Dave? Do you know?
April 29th, 2022.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Thank you for putting the year in, because mm-hmm. I do that. And I think
it's been a long time.
It has. How long have you been working on this?
We started working on it 6 years ago. It was when the very first time we recorded, I think. Is that true? Maybe five or 6 years ago was
when we did
our first recording session. And we recorded over a space of a few years. And,
but that's not how long we've... Have we known each other that long, roughly? No. Okay. Four years?
Though. Oh, no, it is close. You know, it's close.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, well, I didn't...
Wow.
It's just going by so fast. I haven't been keeping track of the days and the hours and the years since the pandemic started, basically. Anyway...
Yeah.
This is very exciting news. So, Cormac, if people want to learn more about Joyful Joyful and accessing this record, and I don't mean to put the pressure on you if you don't know all the URLs, but can you direct people to following you on social media and the internet generally? Dave. I figured that was going to happen. Because he's the producer.
It's just that, like, the funny thing is that, like... Dave and I both are in some ways atypical of mind, and hanging on to the things that are the details is something that unfairly sometimes I offload onto Dave, which is fair.
I think Dave is someone, when you have someone like that, like Dave, they have that detail oriented mind.
He does.
I feel like, wasn't it Dave? Aren't you the one who reached out to me about this whole conversation to initiate
100%.
Dave's the organizer. That's how it is. Sometimes you need a person in your midst. You need a producer.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dave. Where can people go?
Instagram, That Joyful Sound, I know is the handle on Instagram and Facebook. And joyfuljoyful.xyz is the website. And Edafix Records.
XYZ?
Yeah.
.xyz?
Sure,
I've never heard of that
website.
XYZ, actually, in Canada, yeah.
XYZ.
Oh, XYZ. Right. It's Canadian. Okay, sorry. It's XYZ. Sorry. I didn't know that was a thing you could get now. That sounds cool.
It was available.
Okay. Okay, so those are the I'll link to all this stuff in the pod description, too. And yes, it's out on E-Day Fix. I'm so happy. I love that label, and I'm so happy you found a home there as well. You should be. Future plans in this... bizarre, ever-changing hellscape.
Yes.
Shows, anything like that? Anything coming up, Corm? Or Dave? Sorry, Dave. Dave would
I mean,
know.
To be fair, I low-key do know this one partially because I'm so jazzed. So we are going to play a bunch of shows this summer, and that is the abiding hope. I obviously at this point we need to say, you know, like, if there's an apocalypse, no, we won't. But, you know, that was always going to be the case. And so, yeah, we're playing on touring this summer in Canada. And I think getting back to doing what we like to do the most, which is to play as much as humanly possible, because that is what we love best. Dave, do we have any specific dates that we can share or no?
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, we have a couple of shows, one at the end of June, one at the beginning of July, and then we're hoping to tour either hopefully all the way to Newfoundland at the end of July into August and then back into Ontario. We may not make it that far. We might just end up in Nova Scotia PEI, but we're going to go if we are able to go.
Nice.
Is our dream.
That's great. Okay, so people can follow the various links we just alluded to, that XYZ one in particular, probably for tour dates and whatnot.
Believe I said Z.
It's okay. We've all been Americanized. Anyway, that's a whole other tangent. If there's a, if there's a song from this release that we can go out on, I wonder... Okay, so again, this happens from time to time. I have two people here. I'm going to go to Cormac to pick. Dave, you have veto power. If you don't like the choice, guess what you can do? You can interject. And then we can have a minor debate until we get to the song we all have consensus on. I feel like that's not going to happen given the relationships here, the dynamics, but who knows? Cormac, can you please choose a song for us to go out on right now and tell us why you chose it?
I think we're going to go out on Cecilia because we've been talking about it so much. And because if you want to sort of get a sense of the strangeness, the sounds, the weird references to various like mystical Christian nonsense and heartbreak and all manner of things, and also maybe hear us have love between us, listen to that one.
Okay. I agree. Nice. Dave?
I agree. That is a fine choice.
Okay. Let's go out on that right now. This is a beautiful song by Joyful Joyful called Cecilia from their wonderful and new self-titled album. Cormac, Dave, I love you both very much. I thank you very much for this time. I hope you enjoyed yourselves, and I wish you the best of luck with everything in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Fish. It is a real blessing to be here with you. We love you as well.
We really do. You're a gem.
Hand and say, I feel you. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, that was a lovely one for me. I really want to thank Dave and Cormac for being back on this show to talk about Joyful Joyful. I love Joyful Joyful. It fills me with joy. So thank you so much again, Dave, Cormac, for appearing on this, the 683rd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Vish Khanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation. That keeps the podcast going in terms of money. Really, that's the main source of income for the show is the Patreon. $6 or more American grants you access to exclusive content. Some of it derived from fresh interviews, some of it derived from my past audio archive of interviews with some prominent people and interesting conversations that I've had in my life that preceded this podcast. And it's the best way to support the show financially, patreon.com/creativecontrol. And for your generosity, if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, local businesses there, and also Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. All of them provide in-kind support for this show, and if you have local businesses in your neck of the woods, please support them. Go to them. Don't go to anyone else if you can help it. They're right there. They like you. You like them. That's the way I hope it works. I also want to thank Jim Guthrie for lending me some music that I use on the show. He's a friend of mine. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Joyful Joyful. I hope you will check out their album, having heard some of these bits of their music here. Or I guess you heard a whole song. And from this conversation, I hope you were compelled. I really love them. And thanks also for subscribing to this podcast and following it and telling your friends all about it and spreading the word about it. That helps. It's been happening more and more lately, which is nice to see and hear. So thank you for the nice notes. Sorry if I'm late getting back to you. I'm just a person. There's a lot going on. Doing my best. Anyway, thank you so much. I will talk to you very soon. Be well, be safe, be courteous. Thank you very much. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.